Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Well, Mara, some very sad news to report today. Jerry Douglas, who played Young and Restless's John Abbott, passed away on November 9th at the age of 88, just shy of his 89th birthday, which actually would have been today. I mean, Jerry was so synonymous with YNR for so many years. In fact, he just reunited with some of his castmates, including his on-screen kids, Peter Bergman, Eileen Davidson, and Beth Maitland, as well as Laura Lee Bell and Tracy Bregman, for a little pre-birthday celebration. And I can't help but think of how happy they must be that they got to spend some quality time with him one last time. Jerry's wife of 37 years, Kim Douglas, was a columnist for Digest. They have a son, Hunter. Plus, Jerry has two other children, and I know you join me in sending your deepest condolences to all.
Absolutely. You know, Jerry was an icon, and I don't think his contributions to YNR and his impact on the show can be overstated. Like, I can't think of anything that represents the quintessential soap opera power clan in the 1980s than John Abbott, you know, the patriarch, not only of a complex and secret-filled family, but the CEO of a cosmetics company. I mean, what could be more glamorous? He was at the center of so many signature YNR storylines in the 80s and beyond. And he brought such believability and gravitas to the role. You know, he could be cutthroat, he could be warm. I just feel like he always understood the assignment, as the kids say. And it's a testament to how much he meant to the audience that John's death was such an unpopular decision. He's just going to be missed by not only his family at the show, and of course his real life family, but all of the fans that he entertained for so many years.
Hear, hear. Everything you said was just right on. But I think it's safe to say that the biggest news prior to hearing this is the departure of Ingo Rademacher and his character Jax from General Hospital. Now, you and I had heard from set-side sources a few weeks ago that he was off the show because there's a vaccine mandate and he isn't vaccinated. But this week, he shared a transphobic meme on his Instagram, which understandably drew the ire of Cassandra James, who is transgender and plays Terry on the soap, as well as a slew of their castmates, which made the matter infinitely more public. So Ingo then took to social media to clarify his stance and apologize, and a lot of big names from Finola Hughes to Laura Wright and Maurice Bernard posted in support of Cassandra. And Ingo will now last air on November 22nd.
Yes, you know, from what we heard from our sources at the show, Ingo and GH had parted ways well before the controversy surrounding his social media posts, and he wrapped filming before the vaccine mandate went into effect. And we know of at least one other cast member whose time in Port Charles will likewise be coming to an end for this same reason. And I expect we'll be hearing more from Ingo about how he feels about this in the coming weeks. You know, I imagine he will be more free to speak about it once his final episode has aired.
Now, in some happier General Hospital news, November 16 and 17 marked the 40th anniversary of Luke and Laura's wedding on General Hospital, and I have some things to say. So, number one, I feel old. I was 12 when they got married, and I cannot tell you how excited I remember I was to watch it. I mean, I beyond fangirled over Luke and Laura. I loved Tony Geary and Jeannie Francis, and this was not a moment I was going to miss. So sorry to bore anyone who has heard the story before, but I grew up in New York City and my orthodontist office was walking distance from my grammar school, and I had a 3 p.m. appointment on the day of the wedding. How I knew when it was happening pre-internet just shows how into this couple I was. But my orthodontist had TVs in the tray tables and in private rooms. So I made a deal that they would allow me to stay for the whole hour to watch the wedding, and they did. So when I was done in the chair, they let me sit in one of the private rooms to watch the rest. It was everything to me. But you did a great retrospective for a piece in the new issue.
Well, it was really fun to watch the wedding episodes again for the story I wrote. You know, I was more of a Sesame Street kind of gal when the wedding first aired. I was several years away from developing my own interest in soaps. But it really is incredible to walk down memory lane to that ceremony, in part because we are so blessed to still have Jeannie Francis and Tristan Rogers and Jackie Zeman. You know, they are Laura the bride, Robert the best man, and Bobby the bridesmaid and sister of the groom. And all you know, all three are still in the cast today. And Jeannie was just a baby at the time. You know, it's just incredible to think that in the same issue as we're commemorating the 40th anniversary of the wedding, we have our hottest newcomers section. And one of the newcomers is Laura's TV grandson, Nicholas Chavez, who plays Spencer Cassadine. That to me is such a great symbol of why we love daytime. You know, you just cannot beat the history and the multi-generationality of this genre.
Anyone who finds out what I do for a living today will still ask me, are Luke and Laura still on the show? Right. I feel like everybody knows who they are, and the legacy looms quite large. You know, I don't think I've actually watched the wedding again in full. I think it's something that for me, I would rather live in the memory of it because it's so special to me. And, you know, I feel paved the way for me to get this job. Well, someone else who was on the soap during the heyday of the 80s is our guest today. It's Emma Sams, who famously played Holly Sutton. And I know you and I couldn't be more excited to talk to her. Hi, Emma.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. All right. Not too bad.
Good. Well, we have been wanting to speak to you for so long. We're happy you're finally feeling okay that we can do it.
Well, I just want to put a little caution on that. You say feeling okay. Unfortunately, I'm still very much in the depths of long COVID. But luckily at this point in time, I have a voice to speak. Sometimes I lose my voice. So that's what you mean by being okay. I just didn't want people to think that I had recovered and for some reason was avoiding returning to General Hospital despite that.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah.
Well, let's start in the beginning. You were born in London into a family that was very connected to the arts. Your mother was a ballet dancer. Your father owned a film equipment rental company. And your grandfather founded one of the first film production companies in the UK. So give us a sense of what childhood was like for you and how you got involved in performing yourself.
Well, sort of ballet was always on the cards because of my mother and because my grandmother had helped coach her and then sort of helped coach me as well. But in terms of the connection to the film industry through my father, it was very interesting because he was on the technical side of things. The film industry therefore didn't feel necessarily as creative as it might to some, but it felt very technical and a business. And I think I've carried that view of television and film with me at all times through my career and always been very interested in what lenses they're using and where they're putting the lights and what film and then the move to digital. I've always been very fascinated by the technical side of it as a result of my father's business.
So how did you pivot from dancing to acting?
Well, I had been fortunate enough to get into the Royal Ballet School, which was quite a big deal, as it still is. That's an amazing school to have gone to. But when I was 15, I had an injury. And as a result of that, I had to stop dancing and think of something else to do. And for a while, I thought of possibly going into medicine because that was always something that really interested me. But then I got lured from medical school. I don't know if I would have got in, but I got lured away from the sort of goal of medical school towards modeling, which because I was offered some jobs. And the thought of independence at the age of 16 was very appealing compared to, you know, 8 to 10 years of studying and being dependent on my parents. So that's how I got into modeling. Modeling, I found to be very unfulfilling. You don't really need to have a high intellect to be a model. And therefore they, I mean, some of them do, of course, but they treat you accordingly. I'm not saying I have a high intellect, but I found the idea of modeling eventually not very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you start acting professionally and when did you make your way to the United States?
So the transition from modeling to acting was remarkably easy. I've always had in my career this incredible good luck. And at age 17, when I had sort of thought to myself, right, I don't want to do modeling, I'd rather move into acting. I'm lucky enough to get an agent, an acting agent. And the first audition they sent me to was a movie, a big movie being done in the UK with a lot of big names in it, like Mickey Rooney and Christopher Lee. The female lead was a young princess. After multiple auditions, I ended up getting the part, much to my surprise and to my agent's surprise. And so at 17, I was starring in a big film at Pinewood Studios, which was extraordinary. And I had a lot to learn, obviously. And I was lucky that the director was very patient, kind, lovely man, and got me through it. And that sort of spurred my decision to really focus on acting. And that made me move to America because I knew that there was just so much more of that product being made.
As someone who's never lived in a different country, and especially given how young you were, was it a culture shock for you?
Completely. And I had to get a little job. So I worked as a waitress. And I was the worst waitress because I never could quite figure out the till and needed help just about every time I had to do something on that. They gave me the key job of wrapping the cake slices because it was a deli. So most people came in and there wasn't really eat-in facility. So everybody took food with them. And so I to this day, I'm traumatized by saran wrap. I've never got over the whole challenge of dealing with saran wrap and not getting it stuck to itself. And still.
It's a skill.
Yeah. It is a skill, which I never acquired. And also being British, I didn't understand American deli food. So these different like kind of rolls that they had even, it was a Kaiser roll, what's that? So I was a really, really bad waitress. And I expected people to say please and thank you, as we do in England, much more than here. And there would people would shout, give me a such and such. And I'd be sort of, what's the magic word? You know. It was terrible.
I love it. Well, you were very young when you were cast on General Hospital in 1982 as a love interest for Tony Geary's Luke. So tell us the story behind your casting and landing the role of Holly Sutton.
So I was really keen I was so keen when I auditioned that I was about 45 minutes early. So I before I went through the gates, I stopped and had a cup of coffee nearby. And it's not the nicest neighborhood. It wasn't the nicest neighborhood either, but I couldn't arrive that much early. And I was just completely, I was doing an American accent because Holly was originally American, which was interesting. And it wasn't until I think the third callback where Gloria heard me speaking with an English accent and said, "Oh, you're English. Try it with an English accent." Thank goodness she did that because that saved me a lot of effort for many, many years. And so, you know, you do the original reading and then you call back and the call back. And then eventually I got a screen test with Tony. And that's when it sort of cemented my really wanting to do it, because he was so kind and so lovely. And I guess he had a big say in who got the part. Thankfully, he liked me and we got on really well. How could you not? And then I started, and that was a shock to the system too, because I'd never done anything like that. I'd never learned that much dialogue. I'd never moved so fast. Though saying that, relatively speaking, that was slow compared to how they film now. And it was just, you know, the right place for me to. And I don't want to say it's a great place for learning, because obviously that's very demeaning of it. But they did teach me a huge amount. Tony in particular, but everybody looked after me on the crew. You know, the in particular the prop department, who for some reason would help me run lines, and they invited me into the prop room right off the bat, which is a huge honor. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but the cast who get invited into the prop room it was big. That was really big.
Wow. Well, you made a very memorable debut on the show when Luke stumbled upon a skinny dipping Holly. So you actually went on location to shoot that. I'd love to hear all about it.
I mean, talk about, you know, the best way to describe it is in at the deep end. It literally was in at the deep end. very cold and very, it didn't feel like it was the clearest water. It was a bit murky, though that helped with the implication that I was naked, because of course I was not. I was wearing a little flesh-colored swimming costume, bathing suit. I'll translate that. But it was freezing, and there were fish following me around as I swam. I could see them behind me. And then they sort of, the blocking was, here's a rock, hide behind the rock when he sees you. So, but the rock, and I couldn't cling to the rock because it was really slimy. And I could dig my nails in to the slime, and then they would slowly go down, and then I'd have to reattach. If nothing else, it was a very good way for them to see that I was game, you know, that I was going to do whatever was needed to make the scene work. And hopefully, you know, I didn't complain, and I didn't get too precious about it. It was like, right, what do you want me to do? Okay, fine. And then the scene at the end of that was when we were in a sleeping bag, and Tony revealed himself to be somebody who likes to do naked love scenes. So revealed himself is the right word. And I, being young and British, was fairly surprised. And to be honest, if it was anybody else other than Tony Geary, you would have been offended or startled, or, well, I was startled, but I wasn't. He completely made sense of that as a actor's choice. He probably wouldn't get away with it these days. But I didn't feel in any way compromised or awkward by it. It was just interesting and amusing, I suppose, that he had made that choice and wanted to do it that way. But bless him, he that was about the only area that he was a method actor. it didn't offend me at all. I just have made a lot of conversation out of that for many years.
So, it's a good dining out story.
Exactly.
Well, what was working with Tony like in the early days? Did you have a sense going in about how huge Luke was and what the character was about?
I had no idea. I had no idea about Luke and Laura. I had really no idea about General Hospital. And I think that probably what got me the job, because if I had been intimidated by him or intimidated by the show, I would, I think, probably have been so scared that I wouldn't have been able to have the confidence to play a character like Holly, or anyone. So it was an advantage for sure that I was oblivious to the magic, you know, and the hugeness of General Hospital.
Mm-hmm. Well, we always love to hear a story about Gloria Monty, the late legendary executive producer of the show who hired you and I know worked very closely with you, I think, to develop the character of Holly. So tell us about your experience working with her.
She was extraordinarily hands-on for a producer. I've never met anybody like that. She affected every aspect of the show. And the joy of the schedule was that you got the blocking in the morning, then you rehearsed it, which she watched, and then you got notes. So she was very specific about what she wanted. And that was obviously incredibly helpful. So we would be called into the notes room, and she would be in there with her assistant, who at the time was Tom Satrano, who ended up being a dear friend of mine. And then so the two of you who are in the scene or more would get called in, and she would tell you what you were doing wrong and what you were doing right. Actually, I don't think she ever told you what you were doing right. and she was very specific. But that was fantastic. That's what you want. That's what you as an actor, you want feedback. And because we had so much respect for her, you just absorbed it all as much as you possibly could.
Wow.
It was quite scary, though, saying that. She was quite scary. And the worst thing that would happen would be if you're in the middle of recording a scene and the voice of God that, you know, came from the booth, which we never went to. We didn't know where it was even, I think. But there was a loud, booming voice that would come out over the speakers in the studio. And so you would hear the after maybe you'd been given a further note from there, suddenly the director would say, "She's coming out." And you'd hear tap, 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 tap of her shoes as she came across this enormous soundstage towards you. And you'd be quaking with fear as to what you had done wrong. The best time she ever did that was when I came back the first time, and I had a little dog with me in the scene. And the dog was not cooperating at all. It was terrified, I guess. I tried to, you know, sort of alleviate its fears, but no, it just sort of was not doing what it was supposed to do. And she's coming out, tap, tap, tap. Out she comes, looks at this dog and points at it and says, "You're fired." She fired the dog. They're lucky it wasn't me.
Dog took the hit.
Exactly.
Well, after Luke was presumed dead in an avalanche, a pregnant Holly stood to be deported until Luke's best friend Robert swooped in and married her so that she could get a green card. And they, of course, fell in love and became one of the most popular duos in General Hospital history. So what stands out to you about being paired with Tristan and creating the Robert-Holly love story?
It was just serendipitous, I think. You know, I was doing great working with Tony, loved working with Tony, wasn't looking for, you know, a further relationship. The audience had finally, I think, forgiven me for coming in and having a romance with Luke, which understandably the Luke and Laura fans were very resistant to. So everything seemed great. I was finally getting the hang of working on the show and didn't feel completely terrified every time they rolled cameras. And then they did this fantastic story with Tristan. And I honestly don't know if they had planned it to be as it was, because the great thing about General Hospital was they watched what you were doing and wrote the story accordingly to what was working and what they liked about what you were doing. So when I started working with Tristan, I suppose the chemistry between us was so effective that they made the story work around that. And Holly, who is supposedly a con artist, you know, somehow from the love of a good man was converted to going, you know, straight. And then they found a way of, which is, I think, very rare on a soap opera, having a happy couple and making them interesting. Mm-hmm. By all these capers that sort of Hollywood insert herself into the police investigations. And that was just wonderful, because one of the things I think that's very wearing on a soap opera for the actors is that if you're playing trauma all the time, it can't help but be emotionally wearing on you. Even for somebody like me, who's as far from being a method actor as you could possibly get, just playing that day in and day out, you know, the trauma and disasters and things that happen to people on soap operas, it gets you down after a while. And I don't think it is particularly good for your mental health to be doing that consistently long term. So to be in a relationship that was happy and loving and fun just felt so much nicer. It really did.
I bet.
It's funny to think that if you hadn't had the accent you have, there would have been no need for the green card. How would Holly and Robert have ever gotten together?
Exactly. And there's so many things. I mean, all my family that kept showing up. Charles Shaughnessy wouldn't have come on the show. Been so brilliant in his very small role that he had. Brilliant enough for me to call my friend Shelley Curtis and say, oh my God, this guy's amazing. And then he gets cast on Days. And then he gets, you know, I mean, his career, I'm not saying I'm responsible for his entire career. And yet.
And I think he would agree with you. He just told us the same story very recently.
No, really?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. That's very nice to hear. That's very nice. I haven't had any contact with him for a very long time, but he's back on the show, isn't he?
Yes.
We can play matchmaker for the two of you, in fact.
Oh my God.
We can put you back in touch, I mean to say.
He's playing Victor Cassadine.
Yes. I would.
But I told him that I specifically remember your scenes together from when you did them together.
Mm-hmm. He made so much of a very small part, and that's a huge gift for an actor to be able to do. And he was lovely to work with. So that combination, I was so, so, so pleased when he went on to such success after that, because he deserved it for sure.
Mm-hmm. And we can both tell you, still as lovely as ever.
That's good to hear. That is really good to hear.
Absolutely.
Well, at a certain point, while the characters were falling in love, you and Tristan likewise became a couple. So do you remember feeling anxious about going public? And how did Gloria take it?
My personal relationship with Tristan was personal. So we didn't talk about it in public. And I haven't. Tristan has a bit, I think, but I certainly feel that still I'm going to maintain that as you know, it was a bonus to our on-screen relationship.
So General Hospital was so wildly popular in the mid-1980s, you know, it was still riding the wave of the wild success of Luke and Laura. So what was it like for you to, I imagine, have a degree of celebrity that would have been new to you in the States?
And without social media, it was all by post. So the mail count, how many letters you got, told the producers how popular you were. So we were always pleased to get lots of posts. And everyone was really nice to me. And I've always appreciated that.
So you ended up leaving the show in 1985 to join the cast of Dynasty as Fallon, a show that I loved. Please tell us how that came about.
I was very happy doing General Hospital. And if I hadn't had such an amazing job offer from Dynasty, I certainly wouldn't have left. That's for sure. I would never have been one of those brave people who thought I would like to do something different. I'm going to take a shot. So, but because Tori Spelling, and this is the story I've heard. I have never met her to get this confirmed, but apparently Tori Spelling was a fan of General Hospital
and said to her father, there's a girl on General Hospital you might like to have a look at. And as a result of that, I got called in to meet with the Shapiros for Dynasty, just a sort of a general meeting. And they looked at me and said, oh, you could be Fallon. And I got the job. So I hadn't ever watched Dynasty. And again, that served me very well because it meant that I wasn't scared as I rightfully should have been to be joining such a huge, mammoth, internationally successful show. But it was the first time that my family back in the UK were aware of what I was doing. And suddenly there wasn't a country that I could visit that didn't recognize me wherever I went. And that was really quite mind-boggling.
This marked the first time that you had worked with Aaron Spelling, another absolutely legendary producer, and you later collaborated with him on Models, Inc. In the mid-90s. But what was working with Aaron Spelling like, or what do you remember about how he was as a producer?
He was the exact opposite of Gloria Monty in as much as he was not hands-on, at least not obviously, at all. So we rarely saw him, to be honest. But I think one of his skills was delegating to the right people and trusting them. And he was a great boss. He looked after not just the cast, but the crew.
Well, you ended up playing Fallon on both Dynasty and its spinoff, The Colbys. Fallon was the daughter of Blake and Alexis, played by John Forsythe and Joan Collins, and was known to clash with her stepmother, Crystal, played by Linda Evans. So what stands out to you about working with those three actors?
They were all really nice to me. Well, John Forsythe was really the paternal figure and was charming and gracious and lovely and so handsome. Linda was as sweet and warm and just as you would want her to be and hope that she would be. And Joan was very nice to me, which was, I think, a shock to most people on the crew, being British and younger than her. It could have all not gone well at all. But actually, she was very, very easy for me to work with her. I was extremely deferential. And I think that probably helped. I realized I had a very low place on the totem pole and I was not going to come in with any airs or graces at all. And I think she appreciated that. Mm-hmm.
Well, in 1992, you made your return to General Hospital as Holly for about a year, and you once again worked with Tony Geary, although this time he was playing Bill Eckert, Luke's lookalike cousin. What was it like for you to be back on the show?
It was different. It was a different experience. And it wasn't that it was bad. I mean, I absolutely loved working with Tony. And you know, I think over the years, and I have told him this, he has been a very, very good friend to me and a real sort of mentor acting-wise. I always say that he completely taught me how to act. He taught me how to listen. And he would also say, if you came in and there was a lot of stuff going on in your life outside of the show, and you were trying to sort of bury that so you could get on with your day of work, and he would say, no, use it. Make it add a little flavor to your performance today that doesn't need to be explained, but it makes you so much more interesting. And that sort of guidance and friendship that I had from him was, it was a very special thing. And I miss him, actually.
So in the years after your second exit from General Hospital, you moved back to England and started a family, welcoming a son and daughter, Cameron and Misha. Did you have any reservations about leaving Hollywood? And was it important to you to raise your children at home?
Well, I think
Los Angeles is a hard place to be, even for grown-ups. So to raise children there, to be a child, be an adolescent in Los Angeles, I think is challenging. And if one of the options is that you could go home, be around your family, live in the English countryside, that seemed to be a bit of a no-brainer, that would be the best place for them. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, this is just a momentary aside as very proud mother. My son just qualified as a doctor, and my daughter, who is one of the most glamorous people you would ever see, just finished getting her degree in financial math. Wow. And it's just started her own business. I do feel it was the right decision. And though there's moments where they begrudge the fact that they grew up in a tiny little village in sleepy English countryside, it appeals to them, the thought of having been, you know, raised in Los Angeles. I think actually, as they get older, I think they get it why I made that choice.
So your son carried the torch. He became the doctor.
Right.
But he's a real doctor.
And your daughter mocked you for not being able to make change at the deli by becoming an expert in financial math. I see all of the connections here.
She couldn't be more different to me in that respect. A brain is wired completely. How I produced a math whiz, I have no idea. Because even if, her father's, who obviously is producing 50% of the very, very good math genes, there's still 50% of mine in there. So it doesn't make sense to me at all.
That's hilarious. So over the years, we have seen you make several, shorter term returns to the role of Holly. And we've also seen, of course, the introduction of her son by Luke Ethan. So I'm curious to know what it has meant to you that throughout different decades and when the show is being produced by different people, General Hospital continued to hold you and Holly in high enough esteem that they wanted you back again and again.
It's absolutely extraordinary to have been invited back as many times as I have. It's just the most wonderful thing. And some of the return visits have not been particularly successful. They didn't get necessarily, the audience didn't get what they wanted. There were moments where I felt like the character development was skewed. It wasn't always ideal, but they have still invited me back. And I can only thank the audience for still referencing me in all their communications and chatter. And then I also, of course, thank particularly Frank, who I think had a lot more understanding of the character, and that's been definitely better. Mm-hmm. And in terms of going back again, they set up this marvelous story right before the pandemic hit. And I was really excited about coming back. And then not only was there a pandemic, but I got sick. And Frank has been just wonderfully patient and supportive and understanding. In way more than I could possibly have ever hoped. And we're still now, Holly's, been now captive for a very long time.
Let her out.
But
to have done, in your guest room, Emma.
Yes, I'm still in the guest room. But when I did that scene from home, which is possibly a first, I don't know if anybody else has done that. It was the funniest thing of all was that Simon, who is now my husband, helped me set up the camera and everything, but he's not from the world of acting. And So we closed the door and I said, all right, I'll do the scene now and I'll come out when it's done. And so he waited on the other side of the door. And when I did the scene, opened the door, and his face was just white. He was so traumatized by hearing this little performance of begging me to, you know, begging to be let out, and so upset. And he just couldn't get his head around the fact that it was just acting. He kept wanting to open the door, he told me. So I think that, well, that's a good sign, obviously.
Right, successful.
But bless him, he was really surprised at acting.
Wow.
He would have just ruined the whole story if he'd opened the door.
Yeah, it would have been a whole different story.
Well, as you mentioned, you did become ill with COVID very early on in the pandemic. And unfortunately, you have been dealing with long COVID and a range of very long lasting symptoms. So tell us what that's been like for you and what you want people to know about long COVID.
It's been really frustrating. I'm not one of those people who likes being unwell. I have not had many health challenges over the years, and I think I have a very high pain threshold. Having been a ballet dancer, you just get on with it. And then having been on General Hospital, you don't get days off for being sick. It was all very good training for me. So I am hugely frustrated, and I'm not just frustrated about how I feel in myself, but how a lot of people with long COVID, first of all, it wasn't a thing. People didn't know it existed. And those people like me who got COVID very early on, we couldn't understand why we weren't getting better. And the doctors couldn't understand it. And some were very dismissive. And I think some of them still are. And even now, if a doctor says to me, oh, don't worry, we'll make you better, then I look at them in horror, because it means that they don't get it. You know, it's the ones who say, we don't know about long COVID yet. Mm-hmm. We'll try and make you feel a bit better. Those are the ones I trust.
Right.
But I'm now on 9 different medications.
Wow.
To in an attempt to combat it. I'm not better, but I am. The gaps between feeling awful are slightly longer, and that's helpful and a positive trend, I think. And I'm focusing on the fact that if that continues, maybe that's the way it's going to go, and I'll just have longer and longer gaps where I can actually do a few things. And I mean, even in those gaps, I'm still by no means 100%, but I'm not just lying in bed in a quiet room, which is what happens on the bad days. So I'd say it's a positive trend, and I'm gonna keep saying that.
That's great.
And if we keep trending in this positive direction, which I certainly know we both fervently hope is the case, do you want to, you know, General Hospital to be part of your future?
I desperately want to come back and finish that story. I would hate for Holly to be forever stuck in my guest room. And the fact that Frank and Mark Teschner have been so patient and so good to me, putting no pressure on me at all and inquiring how I am now and then, that means the world to me. And so for many, many reasons, I do hope as soon as possible to come back and finish that story.
So do we.
Yeah.
Now, as you mentioned, you have some very happy personal news that just happened. You recently got married to your husband, Simon McCoy, and from the smiles on your faces in your wedding photo, it seems like it was a very wonderful day. So what can you tell us about him and about your big day?
He's a news presenter, and he's incredibly kind. And my children really genuinely love him. And for somebody who had said for years, I mean, actually decades, I'm never going to get married again. I'm never going to live with anyone again. That just speaks to how lovely he is. And he's been incredibly lovely to me with my long COVID, very understanding and supportive. And he doesn't mollycoddle me, but likewise, he doesn't make fun of it either or diminish it. So somehow that very fine line of looking after somebody, he's got it just right. And of course, we were together before I got ill, because otherwise, if that's the only dynamic that works, that's not right either. But no, it's very good news for me personally, and I'm as surprised as anyone that this is where I am.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, we're so happy for you. I think I told the story on the podcast of the last time you and I had spoken, which was by Zoom, and he came in, and I could just tell from the way that you reacted to him and the way that he reacted to you how special your bond was. So I was so, so happy for both of you.
To find somebody who's not in the entertainment world, but who's in the public eye is a lovely thing. That's a very magical sort of sweet spot there. But also, who wears makeup? He gets to wear makeup at work. He gets it, you know. So it's a very amusing thing that, you know, if there's makeup on the pillows, it could be his. And he's not an actor. It's ideal.
Perfect.
Yes.
That's really funny. So before we let you go, Emma, you know, can you sum up how landing on General Hospital back in 1983 changed your life and what the loyalty of the GH audience to you and to the character has meant to you for all of these years?
It was professionally by far the best thing that ever happened to me. I loved it. I absolutely loved the job. My little dressing room was my home away from home. The set of the Scorpio townhouse was also my home away from home. We kept things in the drawers. I mean, that's how much time we spent there. To have had this much encouragement and support from an audience for such a long time is I do not take it for granted. I don't take it lightly. I am so appreciative that the audience are still so kind to me and encouraging. You know, there's groups of people who still get together on a Friday and watch Holly and Robert stories and old clips of their fun times that they had. It is shocking to me that it's lasted such a long time. And every time people on Twitter say, oh, it's the anniversary of this 30 years ago or whatever, to still be in anybody's awareness of a job that you've done, something that, you know, you meant a lot to you, but that it means a lot to so many people out there is mind-boggling. And I am so, so grateful for it. I do not take it lightly at all.
Well, we are so grateful that we got to talk to you today and really hope that you continue in your positive recovery and wish you the best. And congratulations on the marriage and your children doing so well. And we hope to see you back on General Hospital soon.
Well, thank you guys for all of these years of being very good to me. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Emma Sams for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.